Good morning. So I'm going to present the results of an evaluation, or part of an evaluation, of one iteration of the harm reduction model that we've been talking about in Peru. I have nothing to disclose. So a bit of background. One second. As you may know, abortion is legally restricted throughout most of Latin America. And as Caitlin said, this often leads women with unwanted pregnancies to turn to either unsafe providers or to attempt to self-induce abortion using a variety of techniques which may be unsafe or ineffective. According to a more recent systematic analysis, 8% of maternal deaths are due to unsafe abortion. This is globally. And the Peru Ministry of Health reported that in 2007, 6% of maternal deaths were due to abortion-related causes. These estimates are much lower than ones we've seen even a decade ago. However, the report on the Ministry of Health, of course, some people think that could be lower than reality. These are data that are hard to come by. In Peru specifically, abortion is legal only to preserve a woman's life and health. Recently, the Ministry of Health administered technical guidelines for how to provide abortions in those circumstances, whereas previously there was a severe lack of clarity on how to do so and the willingness to provide legal abortion. And advocates had documented cases of women who'd been denied abortion despite life-threatening circumstances. But I'll note that this study was conducted before those guidelines were issued. Caitlin already discussed the harm reduction model developed in Uruguay by Iniciativa Sanitarias, which was a group of OBGYNs who got together and tried to figure out a legal way to provide women information despite a highly restricted setting. The goal, as Caitlin said, was to decrease the negative health consequences. But for our purposes, it's important to focus on these components, which are that the harm reduction intervention itself was a consultation for women with unwanted pregnancies before and after they self-induced. It provided information on unsafe and safer methods and encouraged women to attend a follow-up visit. The results of that study found that 73% of women who got the consultation returned for follow-up, 89% of those women who actually did self-induce return for follow-up. Misoprostol for, you know, I don't know if we've fully discussed it, is a safer, more effective alternative to other self-induction methods. And it is available in almost all countries in Latin America, including Peru. Harm reduction services, or at least the model that we're discussing, was first implemented in 2006 at International Planned Parenthood affiliate INPARES. INPARES has 13 clinics around the country that provide family planning services. And after implementing this harm reduction intervention, only 30 to 50% of women were found to have returned for follow-up in the pre-study period between July and December 2011. And so in November 2011, Invitus initiated a telephone follow-up in order to encourage women, in order to find out what happened to women that didn't come back. Providers didn't know what was happening to women who didn't come back for follow-up or whether they had experienced any complications. The clinical protocol was actually based on a recent U.S. study in which clinic staff called women approximately 1 week after misoprostol use and asked them whether they had taken it, whether they knew that their abortion was complete, and whether they had any complications. So to recap, the harm reduction model in Peru was to give women a consultation after discovering they had an unwanted pregnancy, to give them information about safer and unsafe methods of harm reduction, and then women either received a follow-up call afterwards or were encouraged to come back to the clinic in person, and they were actually given the choice of which one they wanted to do. So in our objective overall of evaluating the intervention was to understand the acceptability, effectiveness, and safety of this harm reduction model of service provision for women in Peru. But particularly for what I'm going to report on, which is the qualitative aspect, is to accept the acceptability and effectiveness of a telephone follow-up visit as a less burdensome alternative to in-person follow-up, and understand the reasons why women don't return to follow-up visits at all. This was a mixed methods prospective cohort study at two study sites, At the clinic in Pares has a site in Lima, Peru, and Chimbote, which is rural. Lima is the urban site. We recruited from January 2012 to March 2013, and women were recruited to enroll in the study at the initial consult. And we conducted a telephone survey approximately 1 month after their initial consult. This was the evaluation piece. It's separate from the follow-up piece of the harm reduction model. And then we also conducted qualitative interviews. So the key finding from the from the quantitative evaluation was that 80% of women received some form of follow-up, as opposed to 30 to 50% before without telephone follow-up. But it's interesting to note that the two sites had very different follow-up rates and types. The rural site, Chimbote, had much more telephone follow-up, and there were no people at the Chimbote site that only had in-person follow-up. And they also had a much higher rate of having no follow-up at all. So right there we have some indication about what are some of the influences around why women might follow up with the clinic after a harm reduction intervention. And so we decided to do some qualitative interviews to find out more about this. We recruited a subset of women of the 253 who participated in the quantitative survey. The interviews were about 45 minutes to an hour, and women received cell phone minutes as an incentive. What we focused on was what were women's abortions experiences with self-induction, and how do they choose to use the follow-up services, and how do harm reduction services influence or mitigate women's feelings of being supported, abandoned, or isolated when self-inducing abortion. We used a semi-structured interview guide that really focused on the trajectory of their self-induction experience or their pregnancy decision experience if they chose not to self-induce, and elicited their experiences with an opinions on the initial consult and the follow-up services. And we did a thematic analysis using codes that we developed from the interview guide and the research questions, and further codes were developed from emerging themes and concepts that we found in the interviews themselves. So results. In terms of the initial consult, women expressed a deep appreciation for the initial consult. Specifically, they were grateful for and often surprised at the non-directive counseling and lack of judgment of their circumstances and decisions. Many women felt that they got accurate information. Women who had made a decision about their pregnancy even before the consult, they already knew what they wanted to do, reported feeling more grounded in their decision afterwards. Other women said the consult was helpful in coming to their pregnancy decision, including one woman who actually decided to carry her pregnancy to term. Women said they felt more knowledgeable about their options after the initial consult, and many women reported feeling more confident about taking misoprostol should they choose to do so, because they understood how to, and they had many of their fears and uncertainties eased about the method. But this wasn't true for all women. Not all women's doubts were resolved. Some still feared side effects, felt unsure how to take misoprostol. And several women even specifically noted that although the consult was helpful, that because they'd never done this before and they didn't know much about it, it was just natural for them to be apprehensive about taking misoprostol. Here's a quote from one woman reflecting on her experience with the counselor who gave her the initial consult. She gave me the confidence, the correct information. She wasn't confrontational. Instead, she puts herself in your shoes, always. She's empathetic. I like that. On top of that, she transmits that feeling of trust or reassurance, so you feel relaxed and comfortable enough to tell her the whole situation. Across a range of circumstances in terms of social support, pregnancy decision, a very strong theme was that women felt really comfortable and very respected in the initial consult, which may not be surprising given their expectation to feeling judged. After the initial consult, women had to decide what they wanted to do with their pregnancy, and if they were going to self-induce, they needed to obtain misoprostol, if that's what they chose to do. And we wanted to know what their experiences were with that. Women had very varying experiences trying to obtain misoprostol. While a lot of women were able to get it without much trouble, some reported some serious difficulty in finding who would sell it to them or sell them the right dose. Other women were able to just ask a friend and get it pretty quickly, or they had success at a pharmacy. Here's one example of a woman who had a lot of difficulty. The counselor told us it was in the drugstores, and we started looking, and no one would sell it to us. Finally, one of the girls that was with her convinced him, the pharmacist, but he only sold her one, and we needed four pills. From there, we went downtown, and nothing. Everyone wanted a prescription. We came back with a fake prescription, and that didn't work either. This was not uncommon. For this particular woman, she actually ended up being able to buy more misoprostol because somebody on the street who sells all types of medications kind of got an eye on her and offered to sell it to her, and they had to make an appointment for her to come back the next week, so a week later, so that he would have the misoprostol for her. It was a whole rigmarole. After self-inducing, women needed to confirm that their abortion was complete. This was part of the initial consult, advising women how to do that. Most women did feel that their abortion was complete. About half the women in our qualitative sample actually were able to obtain a follow-up ultrasound, either at Embodis or another clinic. And several women reported that they knew that their abortion was complete because they had a period, which was great. However, there were some women who had much more trouble. A minority of the women reported delaying obtaining a follow-up ultrasound because despite the advice they got in the initial consult to get one, they realized that they didn't know how to ask for an ultrasound without revealing that they'd self-induced. So they were kind of in a bind there. Other women delayed obtaining an ultrasound because they couldn't afford it. It's about 15, it was about 50 soles, which is about $15, and they just didn't have the money. Just a couple of women said they weren't sure if their abortion was complete, but they also didn't express great concern and had plans to follow up with the clinic at some point. Women expressed similar levels of quality of satisfaction with the follow-up as with the initial consult. Women used follow-up services in two main ways: emotional support. The openness and availability of the counselors inspired trust and made women feel listened to. A lot of the trust that they expressed in the follow-up was built on the experience they had in the initial consult. It was often the same person. Women who didn't tell anyone else in their life about their abortion specifically talked about the closeness they felt with the counselor and depending on them for support. Women also used follow-up to confirm their symptoms and bleeding were normal and to confirm their abortion was complete. Many of them got advice to go get an ultrasound. But we found that these are not formally separable. Women called with concerns about bleeding or pain, for example, and got emotional support as part of that process. Here's one quote of a woman who talked about emotional support. I called her like two times, I think, in the morning, and she answered and listened. And, of course, I couldn't say much because I was in school. But I felt so bad that I needed someone to talk to. And since I couldn't tell anyone because of embarrassment, I guess, I don't know, she was the one that was there, always there to listen to me. I think what calmed me most was her reassurance that I was able to make any decision. And then another woman who focused more on the information about her health status. The counselor called me on a Monday to see how I was. I had horrible pain until Tuesday, and then I kept bleeding for 3 weeks, a lot, more blood than I thought. Obviously, I was anxious. I lost more blood, almost a month or more, time she was bleeding. The counselor said it was probably because I had not expulsed everything, and I think that's what it was, because then it stopped. She said, you have to be seen. You have to go to another gynecologist. If you have to go to another gynecologist, no problem. They won't know you've had an abortion, but you have to go. Focusing on telephone versus in-person follow-up, the majority of participants wanted and actually had telephone follow-up during their abortion process. The benefits included easy access to someone with expertise. The calls were convenient when they lived far away from the clinic and helpful for questions during evening and weekend hours. One woman also noted that she didn't want to receive calls, and another did not find them to be helpful. So this wasn't universal, but it was a strong theme. One woman actually recommended that email follow-up would have been better for her. On the other hand, women did feel supported when they received calls from the counselor and appreciated having the number of the counselor on hand if they were to have concerns. On the other hand, some women actually did not receive follow-up calls, and they said they would have wanted the counselor to initiate a follow-up phone call with them as opposed to them having to call the person. So there was a diversity of preferences around this, but almost universally positive experiences with what they did have. Some women who actually had questions about their bleeding or other symptoms initiated a follow-up telephone call, and then were advised to go to the clinic. And so the follow-up types could be seen as complementary, not one or the other. And what we found is that how and why women use each type of follow-up was a result of what they felt they needed, both in terms of emotional support and medical care, not what they indicated at the time of the initial consult, what they thought they would need. It more depended on what actually happened to them. Though women had had diverse perspectives, we think this highlights the flexibility of having telephone follow-up available to meet women's needs. And as an example, one woman described the benefits of telephone follow-up as a balance between feeling supported, but also maintaining her privacy during the process. And she says, telephone follow-up was more than sufficient. It's a very personal moment, and you want the minimum communication. You want to feel support, but at the same time, not have so much interaction. So, in conclusion, women expressed extraordinarily high levels of satisfaction with this service. High levels of satisfaction with abortion services is not uncommon. We see this across surveys in the United States as well. And there's several theories about that, particularly that women are grateful that they got an abortion. But what this qualitative evaluation kind of bears out is the hows and whys of their satisfaction. For this context, women felt great support. They felt confidence in and in their decision and knowledge regarding their pregnancy decision and their use of misoprostol. They noted feeling a lack of judgment and getting accurate information. However, not all women need or seek the same type or level of follow-up. Some women who did not receive follow-up didn't seek it out because they didn't feel they needed it. They had an uneventful, successful abortion process, and it simply wasn't important to them to spend the time to do that. Another finding is that misoprostol might be difficult to obtain in some areas. Previous studies have noted that misoprostol is easy to obtain or ubiquitous in Peru. But this analysis demonstrates that from the perspective of some women seeking misoprostol, considerable time, effort, and money is required to find a pharmacy or person to buy the pills and to obtain the correct number of pills. In the future, we're going to look more at women's preferences around this service, since at least one person discussed email, and in our quantitative survey, 75% of women said they'd be interested in text messages as a way to do follow-up. This could be useful for women who more follow-up than that isn't necessary or desirable. Just knowing that they can do it might be more important than actually following through with follow-up. And it could also help free up staff to provide more support to women who clearly desire more close contact for different reasons. And is also incredibly useful for thinking about the way that women experience self-induction in rural areas versus urban areas. Thank you. I look forward to your questions.